This is Upstate's HealthLink on Air. Linda Cohen here with you. Birth control, while it's still a topic of much controversy, not only involving whether to utilize it, but if you do, what method really works the best? Well, here to help us understand some of the latest findings is Dr. Karen Thielen. She's assistant professor of pediatrics with special training in adolescent medicine at Upstate Medical University. Welcome, Dr. Thielen. Thanks for coming.
Thank you so much.
So I guess there still is some controversy around birth control, and yet in this country, teens are very sexually active. Tell us about that.
Well, first of all, I guess I might dispute the idea that there's controversy around birth control, just in that birth control is widely used and very safe and effective worldwide. So it's a misconception when teenagers think that it's controversial. It is very safe and very effective. And unfortunately, I mean, you are right, there is some controversy, and it's unfortunate in this country, and that's part of the reason, perhaps, why we have a higher teen pregnancy rate than other industrialized countries.
I also read somewhere that teens these days, almost 50% of adolescents have had sex by the 12th grade.
Yes, there's a 2011 CDC survey, and 50% by 12th grade have had sex. And if you go up to age 20, you've got more in the 70s, about 70%. About 75% of people have sex before marriage. So with the, there's a decreasing age of menarche, which is the age of your first period, and an increasing age of first marriage. So that gives a longer period in between, a longer period of fertility when women need birth control.
So basically, girls are getting their periods much younger and basically becoming sexually active much younger. And teen pregnancy may not be on the rise, but it's pretty high in this country relative to other industrialized nations.
Yes, so the rate of sexual activity in this country among teenagers is not higher. So when you survey sort of France and Sweden and Great Britain and the United States, you get the same numbers of, or the same percentages of teenagers that are having sex.
50%.
However, in this, when you look at unplanned pregnancy, teen pregnancies, and abortion rates, those are much higher in this country than in those other industrialized countries. And why is that? That's because of the use of contraception and the use of highly effective contraception.
You mean in these other countries?
Yes, that's why they have a lower teen pregnancy rate. Here we have, of all teen pregnancies, about 80%, 82% is the number that are unplanned or unwanted.
Yeah, and that leads to a lot of problems with a lot of unwanted pregnancies, single moms who didn't prepare to be single moms, didn't necessarily want to be single moms, and we know all the different societal kind of sequelae, things that follow there. When a child has a child, so to speak,
yes,
and isn't ready for it.
It's a huge public health problem, and it's a very stubborn public health problem and a difficult one to address. And part of the answer really is education and contraception. And I do always say the ABCs of sexuality, abstinence, be faithful, and the C is for condom, but really use a condom and some other highly effective contraception. So teens need to be using a dual method.
So let's get back to this. When you say condom, that puts part of the onus on the male partner, but when we're talking today, we're going to be talking a little bit more about what young women can do and should be doing to basically prevent unplanned pregnancy.
Yes. So a condom should always be used, but a condom is not effective enough. There's at least a 10% failure rate, if not 20% failure rate. And so one of the issues is the difference between perfect use and normal, everyday, actual use when it's used in teenagers when you're talking about contraception. And what's great about the long-acting reversible contraception, which is often shortened as LARCs, L-A-R-C for long-acting reversible contraception, is that there's no difference between actual use and perfect use. So once a LARC is in place, the teenager or the young woman never has to think about it or worry about it, and it's highly effective.
Okay, well, let's get right to it then. When you talk about LARCs, that's a term that characterizes certain types of contraception, right? Something that will be long-acting, long-lasting, mm-hmm. and they don't have to worry about failure to remember to do it, for example.
Yes, it's forgettable.
Right. But let's go through some of the choices that exist today and what the benefits and what the potential pitfalls are with using them. What about the pill? I still read somewhere that the pill is the most utilized form of contraception in this country. especially even with young teens?
The pill is a great option. The issue is it's not the most effective option. So if you're a physician and you have two different medicines and one works better, we always start with the one that works better, especially when they're both safe and one is more effective. So we have a lot of young women who do choose the pill, and it can work, but you do need to take it every day.
And I read somewhere that its failure rate can be up to 9%.
Exactly.
And is that largely because people forget?
I think so. It's partially that they forget. A big issue is the end of the month getting back to the pharmacy and refilling their prescription. Another issue is even do they actually ever start it? It gets prescribed and they forget about it and they never actually begin it. They may lose their insurance and not be able to get a new prescription, or they may be embarrassed going to the pharmacy, or they may not have a ride. They may not want their mother to know, so they don't ask. So there are many issues.
A lot of contributing factors to why it might fail. And also, not everyone's a candidate for using the pill. Is that correct in terms of medical concerns?
Typically when we say the pill, we're referring to combined oral contraception, which would include estrogen and progesterone. And some people have some contraindications to use of estrogen. So sometimes there's a reason why you're not a candidate for a pill that has estrogen in it. For example, if you've had a blood clot.
Mm-hmm. It could create more potential for blood clots, for example,
exactly.
And you could have a stroke or something like that.
Exactly. Now, I should say there is no form of birth control that's ever been invented that is more dangerous than pregnancy.
Okay. So that the point is that what you go through, why don't you explain that?
Sure. If you become pregnant, you have a very much higher risk of having a blood clot than if you take the birth control pill.
But still, some people have more of a tendency to have a problem if they were to take a pill.
So if someone has a clotting tendency, for example, if they've had a clot before, I would recommend that they not take estrogen, and anyone would recommend not to use estrogen because they'd be at risk for having a blood clot. However, the greater risk would be getting pregnant. So if they use no birth control and they become pregnant, that's an even higher risk for a clot.
Wow. Well, if you're just joining us, you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air. I'm Linda Cohen here with Dr. Karen Thielen. She's a pediatrician specializing in adolescent medicine. And we're talking about the most effective birth control methods available today, especially for younger women. So what about the implant? Tell us about that. It's not new, but it's new to a lot of people. What is it?
So the current implant is a one little rod. It's a couple centimeters long. It goes into the arm. It's called Nexplanon, and it releases a small amount of progesterone. It lasts for 3 years. The procedure to implant it is very simple. It takes about 5 minutes, and it just goes subcutaneously. It hurts probably as much as getting a shot would, or even less than that. It releases progesterone, and it's very highly effective. So once it's in there, you can completely forget about it for 3 years, and it's as effective as sterilization, except that it's reversible, so you can take it out.
Would that fit within that characteristic of the LARC that
Yes.
you were saying? So this is one of the long-acting,
Yes.
long-lasting ones.
Yes.
What about, pardon me, what about the shot?
So the shot is commonly referred to as Depo. That's a shot that you would get every 12 weeks that is also progesterone only, like the implant. And that is also quite effective, not as effective as having an implant or an IUD. And a lot of that difference in effectiveness just has to do with women who don't return at the 12 weeks to the doctors to get another shot. There also may be more side effects with Depo.
There's also one called the patch. So is that something you wear?
Yes, the patch is just like a birth control pill, except instead of taking it every day, you have a sticker that you, a small couple centimeter by couple centimeter square sticker, like a Band-Aid, a little bit bigger than a Band-Aid, that you wear, and you change, you will change it every week.
And how long does that last?
Well, it's just a week. So you put it on, say you put it on Sunday, then the next Sunday you put on a different one, and the next Sunday you put on a different one.
So that doesn't fall, it would sound to me, that kind of vigilance doesn't fall within that LARC.
Exactly.
That long acting.
And some people really like the patch because you don't have to think about it every day like you do with the pill. But you're right, it does not fall within the long acting. It's not forgettable. You have to remember it each week.
How about the ring?
The ring is, again, it's like the birth control pill, the same medicines, estrogen and progesterone, but it's inserted into the vagina and it stays for 3 weeks and it releases a small amount of hormone that way. And it can be very popular, too. Some people really like that.
But that requires you visiting the doctor every 3 weeks to have it inserted and removed, or do that yourself?
No, the teens can put it in themselves, particularly girls that have used tampons. It's a small ring. It's flexible. You just sort of bend it and put it in. You really can't do it wrong. Sometimes we help them on the first time if they're nervous about it.
So would you say that also falls into a more effective method?
We group that in with the birth control pills, too, because you still do have to think about it.
So let's get to the real kind of elephant in the room, the IUD. I understand it's back.
Yes.
And I understand there's some research supporting the fact that it can be very effective, where it had been, it gotten some very bad press. Tell us about the history there.
Well, back in the 70s and early 80s, there was an IUD that had been associated with an increased risk of pelvic infections. However, those studies were fraught with methodologic errors.
That's the Dalcon Shield.
They did not have an appropriate control group at all. You really need to compare to other women that are having sex. You can't compare women using birth control to all women. So in the more current studies with appropriate control groups, there's actually a decreased risk of pelvic infections with some of these IUDs. The only time there's a slight increased risk would be at the time of insertion. So we always would have to make sure that a woman doesn't have a pelvic infection before you would put one in.
So of all the ones we've just mentioned, which ones do you think are the most valuable, most effective?
Well, preventing
teen pregnancy.
The most effective methods are the long-acting reversible methods, or the LARCs. Those are the most highly effective methods. They're as effective as sterilization, but they're reversible. That would include the implant, which is called Nexplanon, and the two types of IUDs. And we should probably say what an IUD is.
Sure.
It's a small T-shaped device. It's a couple centimeters long that's inserted by a doctor into the uterus, and it can be put in teenagers, young women, women who have had children, or women who have not had children. And it stays in the uterus. There's one with no hormones, just with copper, and that lasts 10 years and is very highly effective. And there's one with progesterone that releases a small amount of progesterone locally. The systemic levels of progesterone are very low with that, and they're both very highly effective. The progesterone IUD, which has brand name Mirena or Skyla, the Mirena will last for 5 years, and the Skyla is smaller and has less progesterone and is lasts about 3 years.
So why would you choose one over the other?
It really depends on the patient and how their periods are and what their needs are, and it all is an individualized decision. There are non-contraceptive benefits to all types of contraception. For example, with the Mirena, which is the IUD that lasts 5 years, that releases some progesterone, this can reduce menstrual bleeding and reduce menstrual pain, and many women don't get periods on it, and that is one of the reasons it's so popular. These IUDs are very, very popular worldwide, and they're increasing in popularity here in the United States.
And are they the most effective
to
prevent unwanted pregnancies?
Exactly.
That's the most important thing. So why do you think, though, that people still are using the pill over the... Is there a cost issue with the IUD?
Over the long term, the IUD is less expensive. The copper IUD is the most cost-effective contraception that's out there. Over 5 years with the Mirena IUD, you save thousands of dollars as compared with the pill. Unfortunately, there is an upfront increased cost, and that can be a barrier. And in studies where you take cost away, there is much greater uptake of IUDs and Nexplanon.
So you're really advocating the IUD and the implant,
these
long-acting reversible ones.
Exactly.
Well, I want to thank you. This is very important information. Hopefully it'll be getting out there and young women will start to use these things and prevent unwanted pregnancies, which are really a problem for all of us. Thank you so much. My guest has been Dr. Karen Thielen. She's an assistant professor of pediatrics at Upstate Medical University with special training in adolescent medicine. Thanks again for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'm Linda Cohen, and you're listening to Upstate's HealthLink on Air.